welcome back to Dropping the Hammer with Daniel McFadden. I'm Daniel McFadden. Six races up, six races down in the NASCAR Cup Series season, 30 to go. And we'll here in a few moments, we'll be talking about the most recent race Sunday at Circuit of the Americas in Austin, Texas. But before we get to that, here's my co-host, Jared Haas, who was in Austin last weekend covering the race. Jared, welcome back to the show.
Well, thank you. We had a little bit of delay with the travel. I had to come back a day later because plane issues caused me to delay. But overall, good experience in Austin, Texas. It was pretty exciting, to say the least. A lot to cover, especially in the Cup Series race. We got one of the front stretch, the one organization I was coming with, got the exclusive interview with Ryan Preece. A lot of people didn't leave Coda happy. And
the only team that left Austin, Texas happy really was 2311 Racing.
Yeah.
Because Tyler Reddick, in his sixth race with 2311 Racing, came home with the win. Toyota's first win of the season. 2311's first, his first. A lot of firsts in that camp.
What did I say last week? Watch for Tyler Reddick.
Yeah, and, like, I mean, you're right. You're definitely right. My pick was A.J. Allmendinger, and he never had much of anything to say.
No.
Except on Saturday. Except on Saturday when he won the Xfinity race.
He won on Saturday, just... Like I said, he finished, he got stage points on stage one, but failed to finish on that. But Ryan Preece basically said, quote, somebody needs an ass kicking, that's for sure. a lot of the drivers were not happy with disrespect. And even the people that were kind of more the one-offs, you had Jordan Taylor, you had Kimi Räikkönen, you had Jensen Button. Jordan Taylor said that was the most contact that he had in a race car that he's ever driven in. It's just a different... There was quite a bit of that shock of, like, that newness. Like, oh, you got all these outsiders. You got two F1 champions. You got Jordan Taylor, who's pretty established in IMSA, not ISMA. check out Daniel McFadden's Twitter on that. But I think it was definitely a culture shock to see those people. And it was definitely unique to have those drivers in there. But I think respect, which has been a talk in the garage for the past few weeks, is still cropping up, especially when drivers are going six wide up turn one and trying to make it out of that corner.
So, yeah, that was the major – unfortunately, that was, like, the major storyline coming out of COTA was multiple green-white checkered attempts at the finish at the end of the race. I think four.
Yeah, there's three. It was a lot.
It was a lot. And that kind of blotted over what was a great race.
Yeah.
It was a very good race, even though Tyler Reddick, who had the best car all weekend, and it showed. He finally eventually did come away with the win at the end, but that was some great racing in the middle of it. But it was unfortunately covered up by what happened at the end. That's what you're going to get when your cars are almost indestructible and your turn one at this road course is as wide as the Grand Canyon.
Yeah, and like, you're going uphill.
It's going to happen.
You're going to try to – everyone's trying to get that inch. And I was there, and it felt very natural of a race where we actually had fuel strategy playing effect.
Yeah.
And if we didn't get that caution late, that kind of reciprocated all this effect of these green-white checkers where they all got bunched up. You had the strategy of, I think, Tyler Reddick was going on three pit stops, two or three. Tyler Reddick was off pit stop between William Byron. Mm-hmm. And with these stages, because you can schedule, you know, with these stage breaks and cautions, you can schedule your pit stops. Mm-hmm. There was differing strategies, and you got to see that there. And a lot of people were excited for that because, guess what? I mean, that's something unique that's happening right now. Because, I mean, you don't really have fuel strategy. You didn't really have fuel strategy finishes with these stages. I can't really recall last time we had a fuel strategy race, and it almost became that way. And even though, like I said, drivers were still playing for stage points, and you pointed this out, the top 10 from stage one was different from stage two. Completely different drivers.
Yeah.
So, strategy was still in effect. It didn't feel like... And we still got the field to be bunched up. That was the biggest concern going into the race weekend without having these stage cautions. It's still delivered, and I'm still on that line of, hey, let's get rid of these stage cautions. Still award stage points, but stage cautions to... You know, not bunch up the field where people can be like, oh, I can sit back here. I got a caution. I can come back. With this, what happened Sunday, they have to realize, I got to go from the start. I can't rely on another caution coming out in this race.
Well, the one unique wrinkle in this race was a restart was also the end of the stage at one point. So that was weird.
I was like, is it really? Oh, yeah. I'm like, it kind of shocked me too that that was when the stage end, but I mean it played out kind of more naturally how the stages would have been, but
the end of the race was chaotic with the fastest car. Okay, this is how fast Tyler Reddick was. There was four restarts at the end, and on the last one, where they actually took the checkered flag, the margin of victory was 1.4 seconds.
He got through those S's so well. I could see it through the practice and the race. He could just cut through those S's without getting penalized by NASCAR, and he was just so much faster than everyone else. So much faster.
So the top 10 for Sunday's race, the Echo Park Automotive Grand Prix, Tyler Reddick won after he led six times for 41 laps. Second place was Kyle Busch, the guy who replaced him at Richard Childress Racing. Third place, Alex Bowman. Fourth place, Ross Chastain. Fifth place, William Byron. Sixth place, Austin Cindric. Seventh, Ricky Stenhouse Jr. Eighth, Chris Buescher. Ninth, Ty Gibbs. And 10th, Todd Gilliland. And right outside the top 10, Mr. Corey LaJoie in 11th.
Stacking those pennies.
He's still showing up. From my understanding, he's only had one finish outside the top 15.
Yeah, and he's 16th in points. And what I do highlight the other features are obviously the road course ringers or the people with special entry. We had Jensen Button was in 18th. Jordan Taylor finished 24th. Kimi Raikkonen, he got penalized, I believe, and he finished 29th. Then he had Connor Daly, our interview guest, finished 36th.
Yep.
And Jimmy Johnson, seven-time champion, got wrecked out on the first lap, finished 38th.
And there was not – they never showed – Fox never showed, like, a real decent replay of the accident. Like, all they showed was an onboard camera.
Yeah, it was, like I said, the 6 spun, and people were trying to avoid. And I think, like, the 77 clipped the 84, and 84 DVP, the damage vehicle policy clock, expired. So they had to retire on that.
But thank you for mentioning it, Jared. Yes, we do have our first interview subject this season on Dropping the Hammer by the name of Connor Daly, who's a very, very part-time NASCAR driver. But his full-time job is IndyCar. And this two-week period, he was in the race Sunday at COTA. And this Sunday, he'll be in the IndyCar race at Texas Motor Speedway, which is the second race of the season. When he's in NASCAR, he races for the Money Team, which is the number 50 car, which is associated with Floyd Mayweather, the boxer. But no, this was his second start with the team. He competed in the Daytona 500 and was really the surprise of at least getting into the Daytona 500, because this is basically a makeshift team. They didn't get hardly any practice or anything like that, but they managed to squeak their way into the 500 in the qualifying races. So they were really the underdog of that race. And so this was his second time out, his sixth cup race. Oh, no, his sixth NASCAR race overall, his third cup race. He made his cup debut last year on the Charlotte Roval. But, yeah, he is our interview subject. It was a great time talking to him. He really kind of knows his stuff when it comes to both NASCAR and IndyCar, and you'll be able to see him Sunday at Texas Motor Speedway. But, yeah, anyway, here is our – like, before we start this, what stands out to you, Jared, from the interview with –
I don't want to give any spoilers, but I asked him what IndyCar driver would perform best in NASCAR. But let's dive into that interview right here.
So yeah, here we go. Here's our interview with the Money Team and Ed Carpenter Racing in IndyCar's Connor Daly. Connor, I guess thanks for taking time out of your day to join me and Jared. I'm Daniel McFadden. So I guess first off, you're now a veteran of 6 NASCAR races. What does it feel like to be able to say that?
Yeah, I guess I hadn't done the math on that over the years, but I mean, it's pretty cool. It's something that obviously I've been an open wheel guy my whole life, but always been a fan of the sport, right? Like, I love racing. Didn't matter what it was, F1, NASCAR, IndyCar on the weekends. Those are my weekends as a kid growing up. So to be a part of the series is awesome. There's a lot of incredible drivers in the whole NASCAR, you know, system, whether it's trucks, Xfinity, Cup, great, great system. And they're a powerful series. So it was cool to be a part of it. And get to learn a little bit from those guys. I think driving anything, anytime, always builds a good base, you know, of experience as a driver that, you know, things you might learn in a cup car, things you might learn in whatever it is, will help you as a driver for sure overall.
Last time we saw you was at Daytona, and your team was definitely thrashing, to say the least. Didn't really get a car start until after the duels. How prepared was the Money Racing team compared to Daytona coming into COTA?
Well, I mean, honestly, this was our first weekend where we got to do all the sessions. So that was definitely nice. You know, getting the practice in. I wish we would have run another set of tires in the practice. I guess we had one available to us, but we weren't really sure if we could have used that. And that would have been really helpful because every time you kind of pick up more experience. And I knew that track. So I was just waiting to kind of figure out basically just how much curb I could use, how much track I could use, because there's no track limit rules except for the, you know, the fast S's. So that was a lot. And I remember the first thing that Jensen Button said to me is always like, oh, man, you got, like, I came up behind you out of the pits. It's like, you have to use all the track because they're all using all the track. And I'm like, yeah, no, I guess I get that. And, you know, we picked up a ton in qualifying. But again, I mean, these, you know, what happened to us in the race was something that failed. These things happen in motorsport. I think we saw a lot of that last year in the NASCAR Cup Series as well with the new car. Some things break. And, you know, our team, I guess, didn't have the luxury of going through the whole year last year to find what small things might break, what things are maybe, you know, need a little bit more attention than others. So, you know, we're kind of going through that and something happened, and it is a shame. It's not the team's fault. It's just part of racing.
So you mentioned you have previous knowledge of COTA. So how much does, outside of just your general knowledge of like the layout of the track, how does your experience in like an open wheel car on that track benefit in a stock car?
Well, I mean, honestly, it's just, you just know things like the Roval. I didn't know anything about it. You know, I did plenty of sim laps on there. You could iRace until your eyes bleed. But it's still nothing like being there in real life. And so for COTA, like I at least know where it goes. I know, you know, certain aspects of the track, small bumps here and there. Those are all very, very important, especially in the Cup Series car. It's so heavy that all these bumps are you know, pretty drastically effective to the handling of the car. So, I like that track. Honestly, I like COTA. I was on the podium there in IMSA years ago. And, you know, we did two full days of IndyCar testing there, in 2020 before the whole world shut down. We didn't get to actually race there, but yeah, great track. And obviously it was a crazy race.
How would you describe the vibe of the weekend at COTA, knowing there was two Formula One world champions there? You had Jordan Taylor, an IMSA star, you had an IndyCar driver in yourself, and, you know, Jimmy Johnson was stopping in for the weekend. Like, what was the atmosphere like at the track with all those different personalities there?
I mean, honestly, it seemed great. It seemed like there were a lot of fans there for race day as well. I think what's interesting a little bit about NASCAR compared to IndyCar, there isn't as much interaction, like, in the garage area, I would say, than, like, on an IndyCar weekend. You saw all the people there in the stands, and like there are a lot of people camping there, which is great. But the garage area, I guess, paddock is my open wheel terminology. It's very, very massive. So, you know, there's a lot of space, a lot of people, you know, fit into this large space. So it seemed good though. I mean, I know, you know, speaking to a lot of the other drivers, you know, it's always fun to see how people do. You know, when Fernando Alonso came to race the Indy 500, you know, everyone was kind of paying attention to that.
Yeah.
It's going to be the same when Kyle Larson comes to race the Indy 500 next year. I mean, we all love seeing other drivers from other series compete. If you're a pure race fan, you have to think that's great, because it doesn't matter if you support NASCAR till the day you die and you hate everything else. It's cool to see something different, I feel like, as a race fan. You know, I'm an IndyCar guy, but like I love seeing if any of us went to do NASCAR, or if any of us try something else. You know, we pay attention when our drivers race in the IMSA series for the endurance races, stuff like that. So I think it's great for the sport. And it did seem like a, you know, a high energy weekend. I thought it was cool to, you know, cool to experience a NASCAR weekend at COTA.
And there was quite a bit of heat issues. Jensen Button was one of them, talking about that the heat was very extensive. I was there on the ground. It was warm, but it wasn't terribly hot. Did you have any heat-related issues with your car or in the next gen in general?
Well, I mean, honestly, right now, I think IndyCars are so hot that it's just torture. So I'm kind of used to that heat right now. St. Pete, I thought I was dying in the car. So I definitely get it. And the thing about, you know, the way the Cup Series works and like all these cooling systems that we have, whether it's the cool shirt or just airflow in general, you know, we're going so slow at a road course for so many of those corners that you can't get the air in the car anywhere to really help. Like at Daytona, you know, I wore the cool shirt and had the helmet blower. I was cold during the race. Like I thought it was fascinating that the, you know, the temperature control that we had there. But that, you know, at COTA, you know, you're doing under 100 miles an hour for most of that track, really, because of all the corners. So there's less airflow. But yeah, it's tough. I mean, it's hot in those cars. It's very stagnant inside when it comes to air movement. And for someone who's never really done that before, like Jensen, it's definitely an eye opener, 1,000%.
What kind of tips did you give Jensen about how to handle that?
I don't really have many tips for Jensen, but I actually know Jensen more than I know Kimmy. Well, I mean, I grew up with Jordan Taylor, but Jensen and I definitely chatted quite a lot about it because I had at least done two races. And I think it was just more about the pit stop stuff. You know, the pit speed is really tough for us to follow as guys who have had, you know, pit speed limiters our entire careers, essentially. And watching the, you know, pit crew guys jump off the wall and surround the car as we're rolling in. That's all a different thing for us. So, you know, it was funny to see him on the first stint of that race because he definitely, it looked like an open wheel guy trying to hustle a giant heavy stock car because he was sliding all over the place. And we were kind of, he ended up falling all the way back to where I was, which, you know, our first stint sucked also, but it was, you know, we got much better and he got better as the day went on as well. It's just a process, right? Like so much of these NASCAR Cup races, they're so long that you can have a bad stint and completely turn around your whole day, you know, once you sort some things out. So it's all about the experience. Doesn't matter how many races you've done in your life. If you do something new, it's hard. It's hard at the highest level.
So you're now going to the IndyCar this weekend at Texas Motor Speedway. Is this, I know, like you mentioned, you've also done sports cars. Is this like the first time where you've bounced between disciplines in a short amount of time like this? Is it first for you?
Yeah, I think so. Actually, when it comes to week to week, probably. You know, we had Daytona, and then it was I think a week or 2 weeks until St. Pete was our first race. So, you know, bouncing back and forth is not too difficult because IndyCar is like, you know, that's what I've been doing for a long time. So that's kind of second nature stuff. And I love Texas Motor Speedway as well. So it's a track that I've had success at before. It's a track that I enjoy, and with our new downforce regulations for this weekend, I think it'll be a good race as well, a better race than in previous years. So I can't wait. I think it'll be, you know, it's exciting for us and BitNile.com because we, you know, had these two weekends in a row and a lot of support in Texas. So we hope that carries over to Dallas from Austin.
Well, I guess before we continue, I guess kind of explain what is BitNile, because I actually went on the BitNile website earlier to kind of learn what it was, and I was not prepared for what I found. So could you explain it just a little bit for us?
Yeah, it's honestly still very, very much in the early stages as well, but it's basically a place where you can socially interact with whoever it is. Like I stream on Twitch, right? I play a lot of video games, play a lot of iRacing. You basically can just jump on, tell all your followers right there, jump on bitnow.com with me, and boom, we're all there. We can all play this game together. It's essentially like a bit of a game, but there's a marketplace type addition to that, right? And so they're adding more and more things. They're going to add casino games. There's cars you can drive in there. There's you know, essentially what they want to turn it into is like you could go virtually shop for shoes in the metaverse, right? Essentially a metaverse thing. So go to the little marketplace. Oh, there's some cool shoes I'd like to buy. You could buy them right there and have them sent to your house. You know what I mean? That's kind of what they're going for. But also having this social interaction, you know, standpoint to it as well. So it's honestly really cool. And it's very much in the early stages. They're going to add more and more as they go. But it's essentially kind of taking the metaverse, which we've heard some about, and there's obviously a lot going on there. And then it was, you know, it's been up and down, but it's pretty cool to kind of see the technological capabilities of what we can do just from our phone. Like, you can get on your phone, you can get on it anywhere, anything with a browser. So it's pretty cool. And I'm excited to like see how it all grows. And you can do a lot in there, and there will be more and more added. That's kind of like week by week.
Yeah. And I want to mention too, you ran an Xfinity series before too at Road America in 2018. What are some of the differences and similarities of running a road course car in Xfinity compared to the next gen car?
Well, I mean, I was really lucky. My first road course race in the Xfinity series, I mean, that was with Roush Fenway, and like those guys were very, very well prepared. Like my crew chief, I mean, you had everything there. And like, I mean, I think we qualified in the top 15, like my first time out, and that was like without practice. So like pretty solid jumping in that series and doing that after we kind of see how people have struggled in the past getting in there. So it was definitely different. But the cars have the same characteristics for me, heavy and slow. Like, that's what it is. You know what I mean? But it's an art form. It's about being patient. Patience is super crucial. You get rewarded for patience more than aggression, I think, at times. But the next gen cup car is definitely more and more like a proper GT car, like a sports car in GTM or whatever it is in IMSA, because the brakes are bigger and better. They took a lot of downforce off of it for COTA, but it definitely, I would say, if you talk to most people, it's easier to jump into now as a road course guy than it would have been in the previous generation car.
So going to Texas, it's my home track. So I have a soft spot for it, but I'm on the record as saying, I think it needs to be like demolished and rebuilt. So like, I know you said you like it, you're good there. So as a driver, specifically in IndyCar, what are the challenges? How have the challenges of that track changed since you made your first start there, I think, back in 2016?
Yeah, well, I mean, 2016, honestly, was such a great year for racing. I mean, if you remember James Hinchcliffe and Graham Rahal finishing side by side. I mean, one of the coolest races, I think, of all time there. Three wide, sparks flying under the lights. It's not that much anymore. Like, we had way more downforce then. And I would love to see a race like that again, but I don't think that's going to happen. I am excited though, because we are adding downforce, and that hopefully will bring the cars a little bit closer together. Turns one and two. I don't know why they did that to Texas, if I'm completely honest. I don't get it. But NASCAR is the ultimate powerhouse, right? So if there was some reason to make the NASCAR race better, if there's for some reason to try to make racing better for them, that's probably why they did it. But yeah, it just makes things challenging, because on a mile and a half oval, you know, 3-4, pretty much easy flat, you know, 1-2 is definitely sketchy, but you know, you're trying to get through there on the most optimal line. Well, you kind of remove side-by-side racing from that a little bit. So it's just changed a lot, but the last, like last year's race for us, I think, is probably underrated. I thought it was like pretty good, better than I expected it to be. When it comes to some outside moves into one, some passing, there's not as much, you know, side-by-side six rows deep like we used to see at Texas. But I'm hoping there's more of that. Like, it depends on the weather too. Like, obviously Sunday, we're not really sure what the weather changes, like literally every 10 minutes it seems like for Dallas right now. Yeah, I'm hoping the new rules package for us definitely improves the racing, because I love racing at Texas, and I think side-by-side six rows deep, that's how oval racing and IndyCar should be.
Yeah, and obviously, you've had a couple cup starts in NASCAR and you're doing IndyCar. Do you have any more planned races that you have so far? More road course races are coming up here. The team usually tempts Charlotte or the Roval. Do you have anything lined up in that circumstance?
Yeah, I mean, in our initial press release in Daytona, you know, we had mentioned that we were going to do the Brickyard Double at the Indy Road Course way in August. So that's kind of been put out there already. Okay. But that's not for a long time. So we won't be doing anything in the NASCAR realm until at least August, because IndyCar is obviously the focus. That's my full-time job. That's what we're focused on. And that's fine, you know, because obviously, you know, the NASCAR Cup stuff is very much a, you know, it's a side project for our sponsor, bitnile.com. It's something that has, they've seen a lot of, you know, good things come from. But IndyCar is the focus. So we'll see what happens. We have the potential to do more. I don't know which ones, but it's kind of like we'll see what happens by the time we get to the end of July.
Okay. So since you've gotten a taste of NASCAR over the last few years, you weren't in the race at the end of it Sunday when the mayhem was going on. So given your experience so far in NASCAR, what's your take on the conversation about aggression level, especially on restarts like that, and especially in the stock car coming from an open wheel world?
Yeah, well, I mean, honestly, I think it's just because the cars are so tough. You can use the nose of the car and not damage it. You know what I mean? So I think, you know, for us, there might be some contact, but, you know, you probably will ruin your race. Like if you hit someone else, certainly nose to rear attenuator for us is, you know, you're pitting for a new nose and that's almost day over. So, I think everyone is so comfortable just barreling into each other that it's all fine. And I think we see with the Xfinity cars that there's still some of that, but maybe not as much. And those cars are definitely the older style bodies. So it's interesting. I do wish there was a little bit more respect for sure in that series. I think that's probably going to be important. But like I was listening to Door Bumper Clear, the podcast there, and like it is still NASCAR. Like you're going to get hit. Everyone is going to be angry at each other. Like that's kind of part of what the sport has always been. But there does seem to be a lot of contact with not a lot of like damage to your vehicle. So it gives us the freedom to do it. You know what I mean? Like don't give drivers free to do stuff. Cause like we'll take all the track limits. We'll take all the, if we can hit each other, we're going to do it. You know what I mean? So it's kind of like even the Indy cars right now are way tougher than they used to be. And you can bang wheels with dudes now. And you know, if you could never do that in a Formula One car, like Formula One car, if you touch anything, I mean, your race is over. So, you know, for us, our cars are way tougher and that makes the racing, you know, even more exciting for us, thankfully, but we're not at the crazy hitting everyone level that I would say the NASCAR Cup Series is at right now.
So we put on Twitter a request for questions for you. And we got a couple. And the first one is what does right now there's not very many ovals on the IndyCar schedule. I think it's just three. What does IndyCar need to do in order to put more ovals on the track? Like where do you think IndyCar needs to go?
Oh man. I mean, it would be my dream to put more ovals on the schedule. It's hard to say. I mean, realistically you have to find a promoter that wants to sell it. You know what I mean? We have to find a track that wants to have us. That's very important. So as a series, we need to be a little bit stronger as well. And I think we are kind of on our way there. I mean, Richmond, even this weekend where Cup's going, I mean, I think we should be at Richmond. I think we should be at, I love Atlanta. I mean, we would be doing 230 miles an hour glued to the bottom at Atlanta, but, you know, I think it would be awesome. You know, I'd love to go to Kansas, like places that we aren't really in, like we're not on the East Coast at all. You know, we need to go to the East Coast. Like, let's go to Richmond. I mean, there's a couple other places. Like I Pocono was kind of wild for us, and obviously we haven't had a great history there. But that was a cool IndyCar race, I thought. I would love to go back to Vegas. Obviously no one in IndyCar is ever going to get us back to Vegas, but like places like that are great markets that I think we need to be at, and so we'll see what happens. But I don't know what it's going to take other than you know, us being a craveable entity. And right now at Iowa, I think we have great racing. So if you want short track racing, like look at that and be like, man, we could probably have that in our, you know, at our racetrack too. So who knows what'll happen.
And the other fan question was what's on your bucket list of NASCAR races to give a go at?
I mean, that's, I wish I could just pick and choose what I wanted to do. It's kind of hard in racing as a driver, but I mean, I would love to do Daytona again. Like I want to do Daytona again and maybe a slightly more, you know, competitive situation. I would love to do Talladega. I think Talladega is obviously a cool one. Darlington also looks like a fascinating track. I think Darlington would be a cool race to do. And then, I mean, honestly, the Indy G, like the what we're going to do, I think the Indy Road Course, Indy Road Course is one of my most successful tracks in IndyCar. So, like, I would love to, you know, that's my hometown. I would love to drive a cup car around there on Brickyard Weekend. So, who knows what'll happen?
I want to ask a question myself, fan question, but out of inside the IndyCar world, who do you think is going to perform best in NASCAR? Who hasn't crossed over to NASCAR yet? So you can't put yourself or James Davison in there. So who in the IndyCar world would do best at NASCAR right now?
Honestly, man, that's a great question. It's tough for anyone. Doesn't matter who you are. Like it's hard for Formula One guys. It's hard for anyone. I know that there are a lot of people who would like to try, but realistically, Scott McLaughlin. Scott McLaughlin, I think, would get in and immediately be successful because he's a V8 supercar champion. He gets the heavy cars. He gets everything about that. So I think Scott is going to be a champion in IndyCar. I think he's going to be very, very good for a long time. And without a doubt, you put him in. I mean, Roger's got plenty of cars, and they're pretty good cars. And if Roger wanted to stick Scott in on a road course at the Roval, Watkins Glen, whatever it is, I could see Scott doing quite well.
I guess to finish up, going into this weekend, can you describe the differences in the resources you have at your disposal between a weekend with the money team, the 50 car, and Ed Carpenter Racing in the number 20? Like, what's the disparity? What are the similarities between what you have to be successful on any given weekend?
Well, I mean, it's quite a different environment, honestly. And just in general, I think, you know, what NASCAR teams are, I would say, quite limited on what they can do on a race weekend. You know, when it comes to changes they can make to the car, you know, we could change everything but the color of the car, you know, on a weekend at Texas. You know, ECR, I mean, we've been in the wind tunnel this week, and we do a lot of, you know, the high level preparation. The team is ready to go. They've won at Texas before. You know, we knew what we needed last year at Texas, and we're coming back with a, you know, hopefully a stronger package. We were on the sim already this week, you know, Monday right after COTA. So there's a very, very high level of preparation. And, you know, we've got three cars, me, Renus, and Ed Carpenter. Obviously, Ed has a lot of experience at Texas. Renus has been very fast at Texas. And we were quite quick there last year in the race before we had our pit speed limiter issues. So I think it's a completely different weekend. But I definitely feel more comfortable, because it's a situation that I know, obviously a team that I know, a team that I've been with. And we love oval racing. I love ovals. So I can't wait to get back there. And, you know, we got 27 cars, everyone is good, and it's going to be a tight, tight field.
All right. That's all I got. That's all we got for you, Connor. Cool. So thank you for joining us. This was great. You're our first official guest on Dropping the Hammer. So nice. It's great to get a little bit of the best of both worlds when it comes to motorsports.
No problem. I appreciate it.
Wait, that was our interview with Connor Daly. We should be, like you said, we should be seeing him again in NASCAR anyway, in August at the Indianapolis Road Course. But again, you can see him Sunday at Texas Motor Speedway in the IndyCar race. That race starts at 11 a.m. Central Time on NBC. But for the rest of this episode, we're focused back on NASCAR itself, which is going short track racing for the first time this year as we start the short track portion of the season, and they will be going to Richmond Raceway, the 0.375 mile track.
It's 3/4 of a mile.
It's not a half mile. So.
It's a 3/4 mile track.
So yeah, it's a first short track of the season, Richmond Raceway. Not my favorite of the short tracks on the schedule, but last year's races were good. They were especially the fall race, which was won by Kevin Harvick.
Four tires, baby. That's what I want every time I come down a pit road. It is so weird. It's kind of transformed into more, you know how like Phoenix's race, it doesn't race like a short track, but it races more like a mile and a half. Richmond does not race like a short track, especially with the aged, like I said, pavement. Yeah. I believe it's been about 20 years since they did something. I think that was around the early 2000s is when they
they were still like treating the track with sealant and all that.
Yeah. So
when it actually earned the name the Action Track.
Yeah. So I mean, it's going to be interesting to see if drivers are going to be paying back people, because obviously last week in Dakota we had some angry drivers, had some angry people.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't see that the situation here, because tire fall off is such an extreme measure. We saw Denny Hamlin win the spring race here. His pit strategy was wild. I think he was in front of the race leader that was. He was almost a full lap behind, and he eventually won with like a couple. He made the pass for the lead with like 6 or 7 laps to go, and with a couple laps to go. So tires are going to be very, very important at this track, and I think it's, again, kind of similar to what we see at Phoenix. That cream of the crop is going to be rising here at Phoenix.
Well, I mean, yeah, last year they had long green flag runs to end the race, and that, I think I've said it on the show before, that plays into veterans in my mind. Kevin Harvick was able to finally kind of pounce on Chris Buescher at the end of the fall race and get his win, and like, yeah, Denny Hamlin pounced on William Byron at the end after like a long green flag start. So if it comes down to another long green flag stretch here at the end of this race, I anticipate a veteran coming away with a win. So going into Sunday's race, 400 laps around this track with very long stages. Very long stages.
Yeah.
Who's your guess as to who's going to win?
I mean, you can't go wrong with Denny Hamlin here, Richmond's hometown kid. But again, I'm still liking the Hendrick Motorsports train. You had William Byron. He was the dominant car there. He led 122 laps this last season. So I think William Byron, my three people to watch, Hamlin, Byron, and Kyle Larson.
Okay. I'm looking at the guys who did well last year and didn't seal the deal.
Yeah.
So Ryan Blaney and then Chris Buescher in the fall. Like, RFK is still kind of, they're on an upswing for the most part right now. But we do have a different package than we had last year. You know, smaller spoilers, taking off the things on the back of the car.
The diffusers?
Diffusers.
Yeah.
They've taken off the diffusers, 2-inch spoilers, so it's different, lower downforce. So that does change it, but I do want to see what Chris Buescher can do.
I got a note, too. I forgot about the man to mention this. Corey LaJoie, when he finished 11th, I think he had to fix his diffuser twice and a cutting penalty and still finished 11th.
Wow.
So, I mean, that, you know, there's, you got to remember, even though you're like thinking 400 laps or, you know, with these races, with COTA, it was supposed to be like 68 laps, there's still time to make up stuff. So don't be fretting if your favorite driver or your pick 10 laps in the race gets spun is in the back of the pack. So
It's a long race. Long race. And I believe I think the first stage is the longest.
Yeah.
The way they break up the stages at Richmond doesn't make a whole lot of sense to me.
No, it's a NASCAR decision. But I'm still surprised with Ryan Blaney, because remember Ryan Blaney used to hate Richmond. He hated Richmond. Yeah. I think this is one of the tracks that took us the longest time for him to get a top 10 finish. And again, he performed well in the spring, finished 7th after starting on the pole.
But yeah, the first stage is going to be roughly 70 laps. Stage 2 will end around lap 230. And then, of course, the end of the race will be 400 lap. 400 lap 4. Ah, lap 400.
So. See, again, this is why I preface, get rid of the stage cautions but keep the stage points. Mix it up.
So, but yeah, that's kind of where we're at going into Richmond, the first short track race of the season. That'll be followed by Bristol Dirt. And then after that, our first of two trips to Martinsville. So it's an interesting segment of the season, coming off a road course.
And then they had the West Coast swing. Now we got the short track swing.
plus a dirt track.
Yes.
So I'm looking forward to it. Sunday's race at Richmond Raceway, that starts at 2:30 p.m. Central Time on Fox.
Yep.
So anyway, but that's been this episode of Dropping the Hammer. I'm Dale McFadden.
This is Jared Haas here.
Thank you again for Connor Daly for joining us. It was a great time. And that'll do it for this week. Enjoy the race on Sunday and take care. You can find me on Twitter at Daniel McFadden. Email me or email us questions about NASCAR or ourselves at dmcfadden at dgnewsroom.com. Where can they reach you, Jared?
They can reach me at RealJaredHaas on Twitter.
All right, but that's it. That'll do it for us. Have a great weekend, everyone, and enjoy the races.